Karpathy related to our work. And I think he pinpoints, like, you know, he's always good, like, pointing, like, what is the most important part. So he caught the most important part from our paper. It's the shift from prompt engineering to flow engineering. It means that you don't use LLM as system one. I'm relating to Dan Kahneman's way of thinking. You don't say, hey, here's a problem. Here is the best prompt I could give you. Give me the result. No, let's treat it as system two. Here is the problem. Let's think about it, but let's also use tool.
Welcome to Software Snack Bites. I'm your host, Shomit Ghosh of Bolt Start Ventures. And today we're excited to have Itamar Friedman on the pod. Itamar is co-founder and CEO of Codium AI and previously head of Alibaba AI Israel. In this episode, we're going to cover agent-assisted software development and enterprise AI adoption, along with a few other topics. So I think just to start things off, Itamar, you know, can you describe what Codium is building?
Sure. First of all, very excited to be here. I was listening to many of your podcasts and episodes. I'm very excited to be here as well. So at Codium AI, we're building software development assistants and agents that focus on helping dev teams to reach zero bugs and issues. Well, that's the vision. We can't promise zero bugs and issues right now, but we're focused on reducing that.
I'm sure the Hacker News crowd loves the bold vision and has some stuff to say about it.
That's what we're here. By the way, like I do take a lot of inspiration, for example, from Tesla, you know, zero emission. It's not just about, you know, electronic cars. What are you trying to change in the world? And what we're trying to achieve in the world is like eventually being able to enable creators to develop fast with zero bugs and issues.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing vision that you're shooting for. Let's talk about, you know, a little bit about your background before we dive in, because I think it's really interesting all the different things you've done at various companies leading up to Codium. So, you know, maybe talk about, you know, how you got your start and what you've done in the past.
First, I'll mention only those things I feel like related to Codium AI. I started my career the second, fourth in chip verification and Mellanox to become NVIDIA and to be sold to NVIDIA, and also system verification. So I've done a lot of verification around here is some set of bits that needs to go into some model and then like module. And then like, here is the set of bits that needs to go out. So in these cases, you can actually do a lot of formal verification and other techniques of verification, which are very important for hardware, because when you tape out and then it come back as a bug, you have to turn it into a feature because you can't have too much option to, you know, to tape again in most cases. So that's how I started, and then moved to my bachelor and master degree is actually around machine learning. And then I moved to a lot of software development, although I did it in combination with hardware. Like my first startup, not the first company, but the first startup was around robotics and machine learning. And then moved more to phones and machine learning. And this is where I actually worked a lot on software development, and less on verification. And I was missing the old days, where people actually invested in testing and verification when I did regular software. And I didn't it took me time to realize why I'm missing that and why people are not doing it. And long story short, when you're dealing with software where humans are involved, you need techniques related to AI. You need semantic understanding of what's the specification, as opposed to hardware where the specification is very concrete. So I realized that people do less testing than you do in hardware because, you know, you need AI for that. And, you know, eventually AI came, and along with that came the birth of Codium AI.
I want to go into the story of, you know, especially you getting to Alibaba and what you did there. But, you know, the company was called Visual Lead. You were, I believe, using the camera and QR codes to help with transactions and actions. At that time when you were building, I mean, AI models weren't where they are currently. I imagine the camera wasn't, you know, the iPhone Pro is pretty good right now, right? The camera wasn't there. So how were you able to build a product at that time that could do that computer vision, especially with the hardware quality that was around at that time?
we had an amazing journey. Although, like, I started with neural networks, like, around 2010. It's like, actually, even have a poster in my university about it in 2010. Like, we didn't really run these on mobile phones in 2012. It took time for the ecosystem to mature. For example, if you remember TensorFlow Lite, I don't know if you're,
yep.
And things like that. And then, like, we started seeing maybe, like, hot dog or not hot dog demos, right, from mobile phones, etc. But actually, like, doing, for example, logo recognition on mobile phone, for example, 2012 and 13, etc., was still, like, not the deep neural network that we see today. And visually, basically, one of the interesting things about what we did is, like, two things that are related, is that we were able to scan from a spectrum from a QR code that was meant for machine all the way to a logo and in between. That's why I'm calling it, like, a spectrum. And we were able to do that from phone. And that was very challenging to apply these machine learning. And you have, like, a few challenges. Like, one is that the camera, like, again, like, when you bump into the physical world, you have a problem with lightning, with camera calibration, and, you know, things like that. And that's one thing, but the idea that you're dealing with the camera in the real world, and you need to scan information. Like, it's very different than capturing an image just for the beauty of things. And then, like, the second thing is that there was a really computing problem on mobile phone. And
makes sense, yeah.
And I think we were one of the first, if not, in my best of my knowledge, the first, for example, to build a machine learning based QR code scanner, or machine learning based QR code generation. Right now, it's, like, amazing what you can do with the, right? You probably saw that, the QR code generators, that combines with control nets, etc. And that's but basically back in the days was hard. So that was a challenge also to run the machine learning on mobile phone. And there was a lot of engineering to do back then, like treat different mobiles differently, even have different algorithms per mobile phone, etc. That's how we dealt with it.
That's amazing that you guys were working on that, and hence why Alibaba acquired you in 2017. What was the state of Alibaba AI at that time?
Before I answer that, I just want to tell you about Alibaba. Like, Alibaba is an amazing organization with huge scale of business. So if you think about it, for example, just let's take a look on a QR code scanner, and let's assume that what it helps you with is point-to-point transactions or point like scanning point of sale transactions. And if you improve that by 2%, that could be like a huge
revenue boost,
like a change in the revenue boost, etc. So like our technology fit it really, really well. When I joined Alibaba, like really the beginning of 2018, when Alibaba acquired our company, then I think, first of all, Alibaba was very advanced on data science and machine learning that is more on the traditional parts. Like, for example, there was amazing prediction algorithms, for example, to predict what's going to be the GMV in Double 11, if the Black Friday. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
Like, there's a celebration. And it's very important because you need to predict in order to allocate servers, you know, the many things you need to allocate even like a distribution of packaging, you know, and things like that. So prediction is extremely important in this scale. So there's a lot of data science and machine learning. I think Alibaba was also quite advanced on computer vision, and especially back in that time, like NLP. I think there is even some. There was a head-to-head with Microsoft and back like at this time. At the same time, Alibaba has a very interesting philosophy that they developed on the cutting edge, and not more than that. Like maybe like I'll use like I heard like I think it was Schmidt Huber like talking about like there is the horizon, and then there is horizon plus one angle, and then plus five and plus 10. And if you're developing like technology on the horizon, it means that you're on the cutting edge, but it's already you seeing it like in production, like you're starting to see the signs. When you're doing like plus one angle or above the horizon, you're basically saying like, I do have like a strong evidence that it's going to work, but you don't know. You never like developed or researched like specifically. And then you see where I'm going. Like, And Alibaba, like, I think really good and doing like the horizon and plus one and like finding the business case and developing for 1 to 2 years. And then like, I'm not saying there's quantum computing in Alibaba and things like that, but basically, so I think like they were really advanced, but at that stage, I don't think, and in general, I don't think they're on the plus five or plus 10, for example, like OpenAI or again, like it's not better or worse. Or DeepMind, for example, they do a lot of like plus five, right?
Yep.
By the way, at Coding AI, I would say that we're sometime like thinking about a plus one for sure, but the plus five sometimes, like maybe we'll get to talk about Alpha Codium, which is the first time like I think DeepMind were like somebody overcome DeepMind in their own game.
So I want to go specifically into, I mean, you guys have shipped some incredibly popular agents in testing and the pull request code review agent as well, I think is doing very well. I guess, what was the thought behind doing like an agent-based approach to this versus maybe saying, hey, we're going to develop a co-pilot that's alongside you to do this, right? Like what's the thinking behind agents? What's the bet you're making on what agents can do in the future? For the software developers using Codium?
I want to start with a spoiler. Eventually, plus minus, I'm not sure when we're going to publish this, but in the months, you're going to see us connecting to code generators. Actually, really connecting. And now that's a spoiler, and I'll elaborate. Basically, when you're thinking, you know, about that, if you try to imagine the intelligent software development landscape in 3 years, not 10, I think you'll have like 12 like amazing use cases that where AI like really either boosted, mitigated or revamped or reimagined how to solve things bigger than code completion and code generation. Okay. And just like give you an example, like pull request review. Okay. It's one use case. Refactoring of code. You can consider that code completion, but it definitely deserves, like, we know it's like a big problem of like enterprise. Like testing as another one. Our claim at Codium AI is that to unlock these use cases, that then unlock the intelligent software development landscape, you basically need the ability to verify code, to make sure that you're like, the integrity of your code. Is it according to your spec? Is it according to your best practices? Does it, it's not like vulnerable? And only then you can actually like try start unlock. Because if you want to refactor, you need to check the refactor actually works. If you want to generate code, you need to check that it actually works. What we're seeing now with the Gen 1.0 or 2.0, like I didn't explain what is 1.0. So let's say 1.0 of code completion. And we're going to see 2.0, which is going to like reinvent what code generation means, where it's going to be highly coupled to actually being checked. Okay. When you think about pull request, even let's think about security. You know, I know Boltz are your, one of the investors, Snyk, right? And you surface security. Like here's something I heard from our clients. Snyk are raising issues. For example, hey, please update from version 1.1 to 2. But how do I know that I'm not breaking anything of my features when I do this upgrade? So I need to put people and in order to verify that. That's exactly what we hate doing, and we want AI to help with, again, verification. So basically, like that's like how I see the world and why we decided to focus on that. Now this is freaking hard. Like basically, like what I'm trying to say, that if you solve software verification, you solve software development.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so that's another reason that we focus on that. If I can promise you zero bugs and zero issues, code completion is just like, you know, byproduct. Now I just run it. Let's just for a second exhaustively like run until it meets the zero bugs and issues. Just like it's not the way it's going to look like, but just like imagine. So we did it because it's important already right now. More companies and VP engineers and directors and developers realize they want AI to help and the thing they hate doing. Reviewing, reading, like testing, etc., and more people realize that you know, we want to improve our productivity via quality. There's a lot of research, so that's how you sustain that. But then that's one reason, and the second reason is the visionary vision. If you manage to conquer, like, or enable that code verification, then you basically like enable an intelligent software development landscape.
I guess the question I want to ask you specifically is, what's the most challenging part of having these agent-assisted testing and PR agents and stuff helping you out? Like, is it training them? Is it having them do this verification for you without necessarily a human immediately checking it out, right? Obviously verifying it at the end, but as it's going through its process, is it orchestrating them? Like, kind of talk us through this concept of how do you use these agents effectively?
I love your question because they really round up and like help like connect many things. And so I'll answer, and you see how it could connect to what we talked about, precision. Although we're not talking about hardware here, the expectation for verification is higher than completion, for example. So the precision is challenging on just like metrics wise. The amount of data that is required is higher. The UX UI is not solved and all that. So that's like just, So basically what's challenging about verification of software as opposed to hardware is that a lot of the specification is semantic and not always well defined, because this is how the process is being done today in software development. So basically you need like we call it like 7 data sources. I don't want to like list all of them because it's also like kind of our secret sauce, but let's go for the trivial parts. Like basically to check that code, first of all, you need the spec. Where is it written? It could be in Jira, Confluence, right? It could be sometimes actually in the developer's head. It could be, right? Like if it wasn't well-defined because we're agile, etc. Then you need the data sources of code and documentation, like I'm talking like comments, etc. And there are more, like just to give you one more example. So, and then there are more, like, for example, the data that is going to run through the software. It's not necessarily like written in the spec, not in the code. It could be in the databases, or you need to execute stuff while the data running. So it's just like I mentioned, like 4 or 5 out of 7. And basically the challenge here, and that's maybe why you didn't invest, because there are a lot of challenges here, is that it's a challenge of UX, UI, and technology all at once, right? Like you need to find a way where you work with the developer and the development team to provide to the system all the required information in a reasonable way. I'm not talking about security, privacy, that's in like with nursing and more UX, UI, and then like engage in a good way and not know. Chat by itself would not like just by like one software development, and then being able to merge these data sources into like really well specification or well digested specification, and then being able to match that with how the code is actually going to be execute. And by the way, we almost like described Alpha Codium. Like there is a reason why Alpha Codium did much better than what OpenAI reported they would be able to achieve on coding competition, and better than what DeepMind did in coding competition, because of the philosophy that we just talked about. It's not like, let's take the problem and then use LLM to and ask it like directly solve it for me or do a chain of thought. No, let's analyze the problem, get into almost like a machine language, but people can understand specification. Understand how we're going to test it. How we're going to test our solution. Like think about different solution and verify that it matches the specification. Implement it. Again, verify it matches specification, etc. This is how the Alpha Codium open source that we released works. So the challenge is how to do that in real world software and real world deployments.
Let's take a step back, actually. You mentioned Alpha Codium. Just describe it in layman's terms, right? What is the research outlining? Why is it interesting? Why is it exciting for the future? I mean, you mentioned, hey, it's better than some of the other things we've seen out there, but just maybe step back and just talk about what it actually is.
Great. So I'll start with the setup. Like, when you want to check, let's simply say it like code generators, but let's take it a bit higher level, let's say code solution generators. When you want to check code solution generators, so typically a lot of companies, for example, those that are generating LLMs, those that are creating LLMs, and there are a dozen of startups from those that raise 3 million to those that raise hundreds of millions, that are usually checking against benchmarks like human eval and elite code, etc. These are really simple, relatively simple benchmarks for code, usually solved with a few lines of code. And moreover, the entire benchmark is available, both the training, validation, and test set. And that could be overfitted, like fine-tuned over, etc. And I don't want to go into details, but let's say one of the leading companies actually kind of probably being caught that they would train on that. So basically, it's not challenging enough and it's totally exposed. And that's not the style of the amazing DeepMind lab. They like to compete versus amazing challenges, like competing against the world best Go
chess player,
Go,
right,
chess,
yeah.
Or Go player, or AlphaFold, with their AlphaFold, or let's play with the best team and not only them and StarCraft or whatever. And what I did, let's go to a real coding competition called Code Forces, is one of those platforms where you, every time there is a new set of problems that you can compete. So first of all, these are usually set of problems that are the hard part. Let's say there's different levels. The harder, usually you don't solve them with a few lines of code, one. And the second, they don't give you the test set. It's private. You need to submit Kaggle if you. So it makes it a real world, competition, in my opinion, for code solution generators. And until today, I think we're the fourth company in best of my knowledge to compete there with an AI tool. The first was OpenAI with their GPT, and maybe they did some prompt engineering, etc. We're going to talk about it. And the second company was DeepMind with their AlphaCode and recently AlphaCode 2. And the third one is actually Salesforce. With their code chain, if I remember correctly, and we're the force, and the interesting and basically the two best results before us, let's say, are AlphaCode 2 and GPT-4. Sorry, a correction. The interesting thing is that OpenAI actually didn't do that well on Code Forces competition. When they give their GPT-4 report, do you remember? It was a really long report, and they have a diagram. How are we doing on GRE? How are we doing on history exam, etc.? And they show how they presented how they did better than 85 percentile, sometimes even 95 percentile. In Code Forces, they did the 5th percentile from the bottom. While DeepMind came and with AlphaCode, they reached if I remember, 45th percentile from the bottom, and then they crossed the 50 later on. But the interesting thing is that DeepMind actually fine-tuned on the competition data without the test. They don't have the test. That's still valid. And our solution, we did not train. And we enabled you to plug and play almost any model that is good enough, like GPT-4, even 3.5, DeepSeek, Quant from Alibaba, things like that, Mixtral, etc. And you do better than the 50 percentile. And you do that with 100 LLM calls per problem, while for AlphaCode 1, for example, you needed 1 million calls.
Whoa, okay.
With AlphaCode 2, they actually improved a lot, but you still need to fine-tune the model. It's much better than 1 million, it's in the hundreds, and as opposed to our 100 to reach the result we reach, but you need to fine-tune the model. So ours is more generic. And how did we do that? Karpathy related to our work, and I think he pinpoints he's always good pointing what is the most important part. So he caught the most important part from our paper. It's the shift from prompt engineering to flow engineering. It means that you don't use LLM as system one. I'm relating to Dan Kahneman way of thinking. You don't say, hey, here's a problem. Here is the best prompt I could give you. Give me the result. No, let's treat it as system two. Here is the problem. let's think about it, but let's also use tool. That's why you can call it an agent, but it's a bit different than a regular agent. So I didn't use this word until now. And I let me know if you want to double click on that, but I'm not going to use the word agent. But basically, like, let's do a syncing, like, process of syncing that also you'll use tools like running the code, like generating additional tests that are, if they're not given or you want to elaborate on them, etc., and do the process that a human would do. And not just like, if I tell you, hey, here's a problem, you wouldn't like, oh, cool, here's a software. It doesn't work like that. So you would probably, I get it. Oh, yeah, this is a good edge case. Oh, okay, cool. Let me think. Yeah, there's this, I can do like that. I can do like this, pros and cons. Yeah, let's use this one. Okay, let's start working. Oh, shit, I wrote a test and it doesn't pass. Is it the test that didn't pass or the code that didn't pass? I don't know. Oh, yes, I think it's this. This is the process you're going, and this is the process we like incorporated into the Alpha Codium. That's the flow engineering. That's a term that used by Carpatino. And then you get a full solution for your problem.
Yeah. So a couple fascinating things I want to pick apart. So one, the 100 LLM calls versus the million, right? If I'm understanding correctly, and I'll use the term agent. We can maybe ask around a little bit more, but I'm just going to use the term agent. Like, it, when you have something like an agent that is running through different scenarios, right, and testing it and then getting an output and then going again, right, is each of those cycles or loops, is that not considered actually an LLM call? And is that why the reduction is so great in the orders of magnitude?
Yeah, there are two reasons. One you mentioned. The second thing is like the essence of Codium AI that we discussed longly before. We heavily incorporated code verification, code. We call it like actually code integrity. I didn't want to get into it because it's a term that exists in Wikipedia, but we're actually like, we will promote it as time progress. It's a bit broader. Like, I call it integrity when it's actually not only like, is it according to your specification, but it is according to your best practices as well, etc. But let's put that aside. Basically, we incorporated like verification methodology and like techniques. We didn't expose everything there. Like, I had like one amazing president of a company that worth a few billions, like writing me from his Gmail, Itamar, what the fuck did you do? Why did you release that as an open source? And things like that. But so that we didn't release everything, like actually a third, let's say, of our know-how or something. So it's not everything, but we did incorporate a lot of verification. While opposed to Alpha Code 2, like everybody are all about models, bigger models, better models, right? But if you want, I'll can double click on that. Actually thinking different than others, it's going to be saturated. And then we're going to move from let's build the best brain from system one to let's build the best brain and the best system too. And when you look at AlphaCode 2, basically they put so much emphasis on the model. And what they did, they call it like 10,000 times, and then pick from the best solution.
Okay, yeah.
That's not what we do. We're saying, let's think about it. Let's think about two solutions, three, as humans, and then like start iterating, getting errors, managing the flow. And that's how we reach like the idea of thinking about the problem, verifying it, like generating additional edge cases that could help you to improve the solution because you didn't follow an edge case. That what leads to the reduction and the amount of LLM calls.
So if I'm understanding correctly, I mean, I think Codium obviously has still trained, some sort of model, I'm assuming, on a bunch of testing data, for example, to get to some base level of understanding. Is that correct?
Right. I just want to say that in Alpha Codium 1, hint, we didn't release our model, or what you see is a reproducible result you can get with GPT-4 or an DeepSeek model. So you're correct, but I just wanted to separate between the two concepts. Yes, we have our own model that is also like fine-tuned on like a lot of data related to code review and testing, et cetera, yes.
So in general, like if you have this context, I think what you're saying is because you have this base level of context, now when you're running these sort of tests and hypotheses, when that fails, the agent, again, I'm using the term agent, but this agent is able to then learn from that thing failing and then saying, oh, wow, okay, well, then that means like this takes me down this other decision path? Is that kind of how to think about it?
Okay, so you mentioned a few points. It's interesting. I'll try to be like, again, like this is another topic that I can talk for hours. So, okay, so first of all, why is fine-tuning on like testing or data related to code review could help? Because the models are so knowledgeable, if you want, I can say intelligent, if you like, if you force me already. So surprisingly or not, like, I'm if you take like GPT-4 and push it like diff of code, you know what I mean, like the plus minus stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it will work less, like worse or less good than like the give it the two pieces of code without the plus minus. And you can try to do prompt engineering, etc. I'm giving like a simple example why fine tuning could help.
Yeah, yeah.
But then like you will find more. Reasoning and perception issues when you're talking about code review that fine-tuning with relevant data could help. So basically, in the AlphaCodium flow, for example, I'm relating mainly to that and not to our two other agents. Actually, maybe like a shameless plug for a second. We have two tools. One is an IDE extension meant for the developers. While they're writing their code, it helps them to find issues, generate tests, increasing code coverage, helping them prepare for a review, you know, making sure they're not pushing issues, keys, whatever, and like well-documented, etc. And then that's the CodeHumates, it's the IDE agent. And then like we have a Git plugin, a Git agent called PR Agent that connects to your Bitbucket, PR, GitLab, GitHub, etc. And that's more tool for the team. And where you can like make sure if that it was not checked until now that it finds issues better described. But actually, there's another stakeholder here, the reviewer, that you don't have in the IDE. We have a set of commands and tools for the reviewer that helps him or her walk through the PR and like verifying issues, etc. The second one, the peer agent, is actually like open core. A big portion of it is open source, and this is how we reach like enterprise. Let's say like we have a couple of them, like even Fortune 100, that they tried our open source, and they're like, "Oh, this is interesting. We want more commands." Oh, okay, now we need to work with AI. So, I'm not gonna talk about these two, but actually about the AlphaCodium because that's like fully open, okay? And like basically, in this process, there are a few, like I said, 100 LLM calls. And you can use a generic model, right, for all of them, or you can use designated models, right? Like when I'm coming to generate code, for example, use a Llama code for code, just an example, better use GPT-4. When I come to review or testing, maybe you better use our model, test GPT or whatever, etc. But the flow stays the same. Okay, now I'm finally answering you. Like the outcome from the models could be a bit different, more knowledgeable, more intelligent, and that could influence the decision of the flow. Like for example, if I generated if I looked on the code, let's say the test model, the test GPT model looks on the code, looks on existing test, and being able to infer a better edge case, then it will change the entire flow because now this edge case would be able to influence the AlphaCodium to generate better code. That's like, it's the steps are done like a human. You don't like spit like two classes all at once. You write line by line, you write test by test, etc. This is also how we try to do that with AlphaCodium. And by the way, also how I think things are going to look like in a year or two. Like you see agents suggesting you incremental, like, but that are better tested, better reviewed, but still incremental, like, changes.
So that makes a ton of sense in terms of the flow. Is the world that you envision, though, that you know, maybe it starts with test GPT and then eventually the LLM calls go to review GPT or something like that to really maximize the effectiveness of that flow?
Yeah. I'll allow myself to generalize this a bit. Yes, I think we will have different LLMs. And this is a bit different, I told you. Like, I think a bit differently than the concept that one LLM is going to rule them all.
Yeah.
Maybe one foundational model, by the way, or just a few foundational models, but eventually the model in productions, and I don't think it will be one foundation to rule them all. Okay, that, but now to explain myself, I would like, I do want to like go a bit, like zoom a bit out and talk about the agents. What are you going to have in the intelligent software development landscape? Intelligent software development landscape. Will you have like one agent that does everything? Are you going to have like swarms of agents? Are you going to have like one super agent that conducts like that controls a swarm of agents? Let's say that's like the last setup of a super agent that controls swarms. Will it control like generic swarm or like designated differentiated agent? I think that we will have different agents, and the reason is because even like I'm going like intentionally not to go to the main point. Even from a reason of security, maybe you want to have different controls. Different agents have different access to different code bases parts, to different like databases, etc. And then like each one of them could be maybe do something a bit different. For example, being able to take a test suite and enhance it. Another agent can take like your spec and generate a test suite out of it, etc. And you want controllability, again, back to robotics. Like you want controllability around this, like robotics that are handling. You don't want to try. It could be a robotic factory, but you do have different arms that enables us as humans to observe and look what's happening. And I think we will want that as well. So I give one reason, by the way, like controllability, but I think there will be other reasons. And then like it makes sense that different like designated agents will have designated like LLMs, and finally reaching like back to why answer that.
Yeah, that makes sense. One area that I think is fascinating here is also the design aspect, right? Like what does the actual form factor that developer sees, how do you show the different AI insights that are happening to the developer? So I guess from the Codium AI aspect, how have you thought about that? And the reason I'm asking that specifically is because imagine you're a developer, this agent's running its workflows. Developers hate black boxes. So now if all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, cool, here you go. It's like, okay, well, show me what happened. How'd you get to that analysis, right? Like how do you think about that from the design aspect for Codium AI?
So I think that you will have, you need to have a lot of surfacing of information and a lot of controllability like in critical points. So for example, you might have more control over like the last push to production, although you will have agents that will be able to show you many more tests and many more like giving you much more confidence that you could have before, but maybe the last push would be, for example, a human. By the way, you can claim that a human would do more like harm, etc., than machine eventually. But let's put that aside. So I think like it'll be a lot of observability and controllability along the way, and then you're going to start having like a problem with like where do you put your focus? Like you have in security so many alerts, right? So you have so much information. So you need to be able also to explore these, right? So like here I'm surfacing you like to your command and control center with performing with agents. By the way, I'm talking about the individual developer. You're going to have like 10 teammates working for you. You're going to give them a task. They're going to come back with question. Hey, did you mean that? Wasn't clear enough. By the way, I see two APIs and I got instruction for your tech lead to deprecate that one. Just verifying with you. You want to use the new one. You're going to have like a question like surfaced to you as a developer at the point of either like critical mission stuff or in unclarity or like and then you have that command and control. So I do think like we're going to shift from having an IDE, that IDE is going to be like reborn with a lot of command and control stuff, and don't be surprised if eventually, and I know it's unfocused, etc., and Codium AI even going to have like ID extension. Sorry, not just an ID extension, but rather like an ID, let's say in 2025, because of that. Because we do need to think like differently how the ID connects, how our command and control connects to the agents. By the way, I want to like, I think there are a lot of shout outs I can make of amazing AI companies. Some of them are trying to revamp even the IDE. So it's not the first time that this idea is being thought of. But I think that even those that I do see, they're still thinking LLMs and not agents. And it's still early. But once like we have the verification agents in place, you can see how we can grow into like now command and control of agents.
That is a fascinating vision, especially the fact to think about that we may have more of this question and answer workflow for developers in the future versus what we currently have. So it's something I'm still like visualizing it, but it's amazing to think that that may be the future state.
Just one thing I wanted to say: notice that you didn't challenge me. Don't you call it an IDE? Why it's an IDE? Why it's like, why is there code anymore? Like I do want like to point it out. Like, despite all these agents, I think developers, at least for the next 3 to 5 years, are still going to write code.
Yeah,
I see like English is the only language we need, etc. Now we did stop like 99% stop using assembly and things like that. So I'm not saying that like we will have only 1% of people writing like C++ or Java in like 10 to 15 years, okay? But in the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to be like much more agentic. I have a problem also with this definition, but right now it's the one that everybody will understand. But also like coding is not going to disappear into 3 to 5 years. That's why I'm like calling it IDE. Sorry, like I thought it's important like not to explain that.
Yeah, I think that's very important. Well, I just want to thank you for the time and walking through everything here. I think one of the things we talked about, right, is I think we talked a lot about if anything, the Horizon plus 2, plus 5, plus 10 in some of the stuff that we were talking about. But what I want you to highlight on right now is what's coming up for Codium AI in the next 3, 6, whatever time frame you want, but what's coming up that you'd like the audience to know about?
So first of all, we are relatively open about what we're doing. So you can go check codium.ai, and we have there like a panel of our products. So we started with, we had five and we had five in the product list, and it was the first one with the IDE plugin we call Codiumate, and all the rest was coming soon. The next one was the PR agent, the next one it was the Alpha Codium, and the next one is a coding agent.
Okay.
And that's coming soon. Now, I'm not saying we're not going to give code completion. We are, but actually you can use any code completion and still we're going to help with coding in a way that it will have a shift in the paradigm when like the code that's being offered to you, it's going to be better checked. Okay. And this like kind of like builds like finally reaching to what we wanted to achieve in the seed stage and towards having a complete solution that we can be the number one choice of all like companies when they want to check the first AI tool that they will check. Like right now, who are the companies that are coming to Codium AI? If you have it's great to swear, you have a fucking production, we're the first you will come to. That's our easiest sales because you can run our technology backwards on your PRs and see that this fuck would have been caught. The second type of companies that they did a 3 months like ideation process. How can we improve productivity via quality? That will like also come to us. And then the third part, which is a big portion right now, we want to check Gen AI tools for software development, and this is where like you check everything. And we want to enable everything, but we want to that even all the ecosystem will work better. We just saw a sneak released like a couple of days ago that Copilot can easily, although that's GitHub and their amazing vulnerabilities, very easily. So we want to have less of that. Either you use our code completion or not, and then we will be the first selection, even if you just want to explore code generation. Again, just a Gen AI tool in general. Sorry for the shameless plug again, but I'm very excited what we're doing, so I hope it's okay. So what to expect from us is that eventually, like, we're going to help with pains related to quality pains related to like making sure code is working as expected. You're going to have more and more code because of AI. You're going to have more and more challenges around testing and verifying and like reviewing it. And these are the pains we're going to like work on. And that's what you should expect from us. We're not going to like focus on like specific use case, but rather we're building a set of capabilities that can be used in many use cases. That's also a problem and focus of a startup, but that's how we operate. So that's what you should expect from us.
Well, a fascinating vision for the future, and I think a lot of very cool stuff that we've discussed. The main takeaway for me is how important verification will be in the future, especially as we have more AI generated code. If we have agentic generated code, whatever you want to call it, it will be highly important. So thank you so much for the time, Itamar, and we will point everyone in the show notes to some of the exciting stuff around Alpha Codium and the rest of the things that Codium AI is doing. So thanks for the time.
Thank you so much for having me here.